This is the Keeping It Real podcast. This is Lawless Lawrence on microphone. And we have...
Divination David.
Yeah. And also we got Phoebs on the line.
Yo, ho.
Yo.
What's up, y'all?
The Titan Phoebs. Showing up. What's up? Titan.
New year, who this?
Who is this?
How we feeling?
2021 was a wild ride. Here we are in 2022.
And it's starting off pretty wild, too.
Frigid pretty cold wild. Here in upstate New York.
Yeah, tragic. It's terrible.
So what are you guys, what's your New Year's resolution?
Huh. Who wants to go first? I guess I will. My New Year's resolution is, I guess, like, the broad theme of what I would like to do is just to, like, live more of my truth. So, like, just to, like, I don't know, to, like, mean what I say and say what I mean, instead of, like, you know, trying to, like, fit in and just be, like, true to myself, and being honest with my feelings and my thoughts. And communicating. Yeah, those are some things that I'd like to work on.
Healthy boundaries.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. How about you, Phoebs?
Well, you know, a part of me is sometimes hesitant to jump on the New Year's resolution bandwagon because I'm like, it's just like a setup. Like, there's nothing significant to me about this being a good moment to change a habit in my life. It's like this external moment that it's like, change something. And then I feel like it can be a setup for failure because of that.
Yeah.
However, I do feel myself like appreciating, I had like a really slow holiday kind of season. And like actually kind of like more intentionally was present with it all the way through the new year, moved to a new space. So I've got this like really strong reset moment happening that is actually just like, oh, that kind of lined up with the new year in a cool way. So I do feel this sense of like, go slow and be conscious of your habits. Like that's as much as I'm asking myself right now. Just like be conscious of your habits so that you can do what you need to do this year. Like, I don't quite know what the changes will need to be necessarily, but I like want to be more just like present and like noticing that I'm being intentional, I guess, with what I'm doing with my time, my energy, people, projects, like focus, intentionality. I guess those are the things. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one.
And you?
I know.
Wallace Lawrence.
I know myself over the last few years, I really spend a lot of time on YouTube idly while I could be doing other things. So I like your advice about being mindful of habits and being willing to change them. Because I really know I can get a lot more done. I just will be sitting there and, you know, be like, I don't feel like it right now. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. That procrastination hits hard. So I guess my New Year's resolution is to really try to carve out some more time and space for unfinished projects. I feel like I do this every year, and then, like, something comes up that sort of roadblocks me. You know, like, now I'm in the middle of an engine rebuild for my car because it blew up over the summer, and it's, like, still not done yet. But it's, like, 80% of the way there, but So I'm working on it. We'll see once the weather gets warmer. I won't have any excuses because now it's a bit frigid.
Yeah. Nice.
So,
do you feel like you can actually recognize where in the past when you've made this resolution it's fallen apart for you? Because I feel like a lot of times we're like, I'm going to do it this time, but I'm like, we don't see where or why it fell apart the first time. Good luck.
Yeah, for me, it all falls apart. Like I said, it's like, all right, I have 5 things to do. But then once I get the motivation to do one thing, something else goes wrong. And I have to re-divert my attention. So it becomes overwhelming because it's like, oh, I have all this stuff to do, and it just keeps piling up. So I don't want to think about that right now.
Right.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, I definitely get that. That happens to me all the time. Yeah, it's like, you know, you like plan to do things, and you're like so like dedicated. You're like, it's gonna happen, and then like something like big comes up, and you're like, fuck, now I have to like, you know, rebalance. I feel like you know, that's just like life in general. Like, it's always like a balancing act, and there's always something. And so it's just like, you know, like for me, like learning to like roll with the punches and just like, you know, I think something that helps me is like dealing with things as they come. That's one of the like biggest things for me, as far as like, because I procrastinate too, like being in school and like full time, it's like a lot. And so like, I know last semester was like really tough for me because I would put things off. And so like this year, you know, to help with that, I've been like very intentional with like doing things as they come. And that has been helpful. I haven't been doing it perfectly, but I don't know. It's definitely helped me a lot. And I'm a lot less stressed, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I think being fluid can be helpful.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's part of what this work we do has taught me. It's like, okay, we have a plan, but, like, you know, a lot of times the plan falls through at the last minute, and we're going to have to pivot and search out other options, you know. Somebody might say, hey, I want to go to detox, and you spend a couple of days planning it all out, and you go to pick them up, and they're not ready, or they don't answer the phone, you know.
Right.
And then it's like, all right, well, we got to do something different.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
So it's good to have a goal, but to be flexible enough to, if something interferes with it, to just sort of roll with it and then refocus.
Yeah.
Rather than just give up on it, you know?
That was, like, really hard for me to be flexible. Like, I was, like, I, like, do, like, really well with structure and, like, you know, having things, you know, like, A, you know, to E, and like everything goes in order, and it has to be that way. And I was very like black and white, and so like that was like something that was very hard for me to learn. But like, I was forced to learn it as, you know, things, plans consistently fell through, and as plans like fell through, I would like feel bad and like beat myself up for it. And so like, instead of like, you know, feeling worse about plans, you know, not going the way that they're supposed to, I just, like, first of all, like, learn to have acceptance and adjust accordingly. Yeah, that's, I mean, like, that took some therapy, but, you know, that's something that I've had to learn and I have to continue to work on, because, like, I will take something that's, like, healthy. Like, say, like, going, you know, for me, like, going to the gym is, like, you know, a big part of my life. And so, like, but there are some days where I'm not able to go. And for a while, if I missed one day, I would, like, you know, like say all these horrible things in my head, and you know, as opposed to just having acceptance over the issue and be like, hey, you know, like you have a lot going on, or these other things like required your attention, and it's okay. And so like, I don't know, like that was just like, that's just one example of something that, you know, where I've had to have acceptance and learn to be fluid and adjust accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely takes practice.
Yeah, this conversation, it just makes me think about how much additional emotional energy we spend on things than we need to. And like, and I don't think we see it, like the invisible ways that adds up. And there's like a couple ways now, David, that you talked about things that I'm like, ah, because first what you were just saying about like, oh, okay, I didn't do that thing today that I said I wanted to do because other things came up. Like, you are burning literal energy that you could put towards something else the more you beat yourself up over that. Like, what? Are you helping yourself? Like, right. And then the other thing you said was just about, like, what happens, how, like, how you're trying to just take things when they come and not procrastinate or, like, put that, you know? And I've been trying to do that, too. It's like, this is the thing in front of you. May not be what you wanted to do today, but it's here.
Right.
Do it instead of like putting it aside and getting back to it later. Cause I'm like, it's almost like paying interest, like time interest when you put something aside. Right. Cause there's like all these little like minutes and hours that are adding up to how long that project will take of you like having to go back and find it again and having to remember what you needed to do. And then the little nagging concern or worry in the back of your brain the whole time between setting it aside and actually getting to it, or like the literal interest you have to pay because you didn't pay the bill in time. Like, but yeah. I don't know. I hadn't thought about like time interest before, but that's essentially what you pay when you procrastinate. Like, there is a cost to that.
Right. So true. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that helped me over the summer is like, a friend of mine, he gets a ton of work done. And he has just as many responsibilities as I do, maybe even more. And I'm like, how does he get all this stuff done? And I asked him, and he's like, I just commit to like an hour at a time or an hour a week or whatever, and then I get it done. And I started doing that. I'd set myself a minimum of an hour. You know, if I spent more time on it, then great. But I just committed to that 1 hour, and you know, it seemed to work out pretty good.
Yes.
But I'm just cool.
I was literally just telling myself that. I was like, if you start something, you need to then dedicate an hour to it. Like, because I will be the person who will, like, float from thing to thing to thing and then be like, cool, I just spent an hour doing nothing. So, right. Like, that was what I was trying to get myself to do. It's like, if you're going to start something, then dedicate an hour to it. Like, be there for it. Otherwise, like, don't. Stop.
That's like a skill that like I was just taught like in school. Last semester. It's like called like time blocking, and something that, you know, so like you set aside, like you go in your schedule or on your calendar, and you set aside like a block of time for whatever task, and no matter what, like you just stick to it, and you know, you use whatever digital reminders, or if you have like a calendar that you need to hang up or post-it notes, you do whatever you need to do to remind you of that. And I find that so helpful, and like to schedule, like to like block in like even the like mundane things, like, you know. And it's, I mean, like for me it's been really helpful, like block in time to eat, block in, you know, time to do like different types of work, block in time to do homework, block in, you know what I mean. And you know, like that, I don't know, like when I find like when I have like a lot going on in my life, it's like I need to ramp up, you know, those tools, and I really need to like dial into using those tools, because those are the things that help me get through them and stay focused. Because it's so easy to jump, you know, to jump from task to task, and then like, you know, 4 hours later you're just like, but what did I actually accomplish, as opposed to spending 2 hours and actually finishing, you know, like one project, and then, you know, being able to go from there. So yeah, that's, I don't know, I think that's really cool. Time blocking, it definitely does help. For me, it has been helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely been falling victim to that whole thing of like, oh, okay, I'm going to do the dishes. And while I'm doing the dishes, I might as well do the laundry and vacuum the living room and take the garbage out. And like, you end up trying to do 10 things at the same time.
Right, spun out. And only actually maybe complete one of them. And it's right. Like not even good, like
not
great. And it's not even like great. It's not even your best work. You're just like, well, I shouldn't even have done it at all. You know? Yeah.
Mistakes were made.
Right.
Compromises seriously. Were had.
Right. Seriously. Struggle.
But I think it's good that we're all at least aware of it, and we have the tools to try to address it. Live our best life.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where my resolution headspace was. I was like, I'm not going to resolve to say this is the answer and stick to it. I'm going to resolve to be aware. Because it is the first stage, really. It's like to just take note of how you're moving through things and like just noticing where you're like, this isn't serving me, you know? And I think it's like sometimes... I think it's just hard to sometimes like self-critique, you know, and I think it's thinking of it less of a critique and more of like all things need to recalibrate regularly to stay well functioning. Like,
definitely.
Like any machine works that way. Like, so do we. So it's just like more like, how can I be in a healthy, continuous recalibration process with myself to keep meeting my needs as I change, as my environment adapts, as my needs change, like, because right. We're not static creatures.
Right.
but we do kind of come back to the same basic things over and over again that like do sort of affect whether we're like feel like we're functioning well or not. So
and having acceptance,
just making it a practice.
What were you saying?
I know, I was saying like having like acceptance over that, like that things change, because like 1 week you could be like, you know, like I don't know, like 1 week you could be like feeling fine and then the next week like maybe you're just off. I know sometimes I have that where like 1 week, you know, or maybe for a few weeks or months at a time, I'll be like great, you know, my mood will be pretty like great, and then all of a sudden like I'll just be like not angry or depressed, just kind of like maybe blah, maybe a little down for no reason. And like, you know, I don't know, like for a while like I, you know, like beat myself up over that as opposed to just like adjusting to that reality or whatever is going on. And sometimes it's not so much, oh, like we need to figure out like what's the root cause of this. Sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes it just is what it is. And you just need to like have acceptance of that and adjust accordingly. So yeah. Yeah, continuous state of calibration. I like that.
It's kind of how I felt. Like, it kind of sort of came to head, like, Christmas Eve. I just felt, like, really drained and, you know, I don't know. I think for that, like, sometimes I feel like I take on other people's energy and, you know, a lot of people were spun out for the holidays. So may have absorbed some of their frustrations and fears, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But I usually have a hard time with the holidays to begin with, so. Yeah. But it only lasted a day.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah. It's like a dangerous thing.
So what else is going on this new year?
Marijuana.
Marijuana?
Yep. I mean, it's been kind of a thing for a lot of people for a while now, but it's like a new thing in this area that's gonna be like a thing, which is pretty exciting, you know, for, you know, because it's beneficial for many different reasons, I believe. And what is it? I think it was just approved in Catskill, New York, for dispensaries to come here. I think, yeah, there were certain cities in New York State that said yes, they're going to allow dispensaries. I don't know about the safe consumption sites or consumption sites for it, but they're going to have the dispensaries here. And obviously, I'm sure it will be heavily taxed because that's the point, is to bring in revenue. Yeah, that's like the main point. That's the only reason why they're allowing it, is because of the revenue that it's going to bring in.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, okay, whatever, fine, you know, like... I guess.
So according to Porcupine Soup, it said...
Porcupine.
The Catskill Town Board agreed to allow dispensaries, but not on-site consumption lounges. The village of Catskill will allow both types of businesses, as will the towns of Coxsackie and Athens. There was...
Wait, huh?
Wait, that... Excuse me? Sorry, that just sounded... So wait, they're going to allow both types of businesses, so they will allow dispensaries and separate consumption site lounges.
Okay,
is that
just in the village?
That's kind of confusing.
Yeah,
because the Catskill was one of those weird places that has the town and the village that coexist as two separate entities. So
And I always thought the town covered everything, including the village. Right. Like it was like the wider swath. So I would have thought that if they don't allow it, that the village of Catskill themselves wouldn't. But maybe there's something. Huh. Okay.
Interesting.
Question.
Yeah. Right. So it goes on some people are opting. A lot of the towns in the area, all the towns on the mountaintop, all opted out. And some people are suggesting that they want to opt out until the state provides more guidance on what to do. It says that if you opt out, you can always opt back in at some point in the future. But once you're in, you're in. You can't get back out. So I think some people are erring on the side of
caution.
And, you know, but this could be really good for people. The truth is, a lot of people do it, and people are going to do it anyway. You know?
Facts.
You know, it's the same thing as alcohol prohibition, you know.
Right.
They created safe consumption sites, which are bars, you know. And people can go there and consume.
I hope they make a point to hire people with marijuana sales criminal records to be at the dispensaries now.
That would make sense. That would make the most sense, right? But of course, you know, at least somebody told, this is what I heard, I could be wrong, but like somebody told me that like in order to get into this, the, you know, the dispensary, or to, you know, have one, it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars for this license. So like, you know, like who, you know, like it's very prohibitive, you know, it really is prohibitive to a certain population of people. Again, why? I'm sorry, like why do we need to make it a $500 like application? You know, and then, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's just
right. Thing.
You know, like, again, you're just, you know,
prohibiting. It's like, yeah, you can do this if you're rich.
Thank you. And, like, not all of us have that type of money, you know, and, like, but, like, I feel like people that make underneath, like, $100,000, like, could really, like, this could be an opportunity for them. But we've just, you know, excluded them out of it, you know, completely.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is one of the conversations that we've had for a long time, especially in the recovery community, is like we need to have some of our people in positions of power and authority, and the same goes for cannabis. Like, we need to have people that have been the experts on this for years, people that grow, people that sell, people that consume, you know.
Right.
Like, they need to be the people that are the leaders in this movement, not just people that have money to throw around and that seems like something that you're going to invest in.
And then the people that are making these policies and like decisions, like, sorry, like, no, you don't just go to school and get to like tell us what we're going to be doing with you know, the substance that you don't even consume. You know what I mean? Like, that, I just feel like that's just like, that blows my mind. But I mean, like, that's just the society we live in. Like, you're just going to like, you know, go to school, like, have your scientific education about a substance, and you're going to tell us how it affects us and how it should affect us and what it's doing for us. Meanwhile, you have no, like, lived experience whatsoever. No point of reference, you know. But
right. Yeah, they're politicians are concerned about the money. And like this says, once fully operational, recreational cannabis sales are expected to bring an estimated $350 million annually to New York.
Ooh.
And will potentially create 30,000 to 60,000 jobs, the state predicted.
See? That money then should be put into helping people. You know, like, that's, I feel like that, I mean, like, it's not going to. But, like, you know, it should go back into the community. That's what I'm saying. It should go back into, at least, like, 50% of it should go back into the community. That's the right thing to do. And I feel like, you know, but.
So this article says there'd be a 13%
tax. I actually feel like that was talked about.
Oh.
I feel like something like that was talked about when they passed the bill originally. Like, I now I want to go back and look at that. Like, I don't necessarily trust that it's, like, anywhere is where you'd want it to be. But I remember those. There were a lot of advocates who came out and were fighting for that for New York State when they were passing it. Like, that some of the money needs to go back into something. Let's see. Yeah, so one of the,
that makes sense.
They did set aside, I guess, like, a portion, like 40% of all tax revenue needs to be redirected to communities who have been disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs and marijuana arrests.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
That's valid, yeah. If it happens.
Yeah. If it happens.
Right, if it happens.
And, like, back to that community, like, what does that mean? Is it actually going to the people or just,
right,
like,
right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, because the worst thing that would happen, that it just goes into the general fund for the town or the county, and they're permitted to spend it how they please, you know?
Oh, shade. That's crazy. Is that how, like, some funding happens where, like, it says that it's supposed to go to certain, like, towns that have been affected by whatever, and then like the town or city gets it and then they just dish it out to like random places and don't actually say, you know, like, say like here, like if they were to send it here, it should obviously go to like, you know, mental health association or like mental health, you know, Twin Counties, you know, like the major entities here that are like doing the work, or even like to DSS and like have it like specified to certain individuals. You know, is that, I don't know. That's like crazy. There's no accountability. Is there any accountability for that?
I don't know. It depends how it's laid out in the beginning, like what the wording, the language needs to be really clear.
Yeah.
You know, beforehand. But then, you know, as the money trickles down, there's people that are in charge that say yes or no, and they just can make it more difficult to say yes.
Right. Yeah. You're right, from the beginning. Yeah,
or just like you go to DSS and there's that one person that's like, decides whether you're going to get benefits or not when it comes down to it.
I can't even.
So.
Yeah. I mean, federal and state grant money is so inefficient. Like, by the time it actually trickles down through the admin, and there's not a lot of oversight on that, honestly. Like, Congress, like, will pass a law that allows money to go toward a certain set of activities, or, like, the New York State House will do that. And then it goes to these executive agencies under the governor or the president that are just, like, you know, people going to work, who are like writing the RFPs for organizations to apply for the money. And like a lot of times, and I know this because I was one of these people, a lot of times it's like young, really privileged people who have to have a master's degree in like a policy area, like down in Washington, D.C., who then are like, okay, there was $100 million allocated for helping to fight the opioid crisis in New York, and like we'll be like, how should we structure our grant? What should the requirements be? What should they be allowed to spend the money on? And like get paid $100,000 a year to make those decisions. That's coming out of that grant money. Like the cuts.
Right.
And I ended up quitting my work in that space because I was so angry at how unjust it was. I was like, none of this money for prisoner reentry work that I was doing specifically is actually helping people. Like most of it was going back into corrections departments, which just made me rageful. Right. Like, and then, you know, like a tiny sliver of it would actually go to like what you're describing, like local community run nonprofits.
Right.
And like the more effective in some ways the reentry programs were, because they were like, you know, small scale, personal, like committed people, maybe people who had, like were in reentry, they were the least qualified usually to get grants. Like you had to be some giant institution to even qualify for a lot of the money. So yeah, like I hate, everyone's like, oh, government's too expensive. It's like these services are too expensive. And I'm like, that's not really the problem. We just waste so much money trying to get money from point A to point B to help a problem that it does end up being stupidly expensive, like with bad outcomes. But you gotta this is where I'm curious, like with Hudson experimenting with universal basic income, in my mind I'm just like, yo, I'd rather just see tax money go straight to people.
Right.
Like, no more like funding huge scale programs for like just get money directly to people. Because
right.
Like the end of the day, like, you know, the hustle and struggle is what's driving most people to like need all these services in the first place.
Right.
But
imagine if everybody in Hudson and no, in like Columbia County, everybody just got $200 additional a month. You know, that's, you know, like that's helpful. That's like an electric bill. That's food. That's a car note. That's, you know, insurance. You know, like just everybody just got that. You know, like, wow. I wonder how much is that? And like, how much is that? And how much are like people actually spending on other programs? You know what I mean? Like, and like,
right.
I feel like that in itself is cheaper. And people getting that, you know, knowing that for sure you're getting the $200. You know, like that's going to be helpful. And people are going to do more because they're going to be less stressed. Their outlook on life is going to be a little bit brighter. And I don't know. I just think that, you know, that'd be more helpful. And I feel like it's cost effective, right? Doesn't it? I mean, like, it can't be that much money. It's going to cost money.
So.
There's 6,235 people that live in Hudson.
Okay.
So times that by 200.
Right.
Right. So we'll do the whole county, because I feel like you can't just single out a city. You know, like, yeah. Because I feel like, you know, just do the whole counting. And then we should compare that to some of these programs. You know?
Roughly 60,000 people.
So, that's not a lot of money. $200 when, like, we're spending, what, millions? It's not even a million, right? No, it's not even a million. That's not even $1 million. I mean, like, if we did it over, like, a 10...
No, it would be...
Would it be a million?
It would be more. It would be... I think it's, like, 120...
Yeah, 120,000. No, maybe I'm wrong.
So $12
million. $12 million a month.
Oh, a month? Oh, yeah. Shoot. Never mind.
However, right, this is where you got to ask the question of, like, I don't know. You got to be able to look then at how much money is actually being spent on all these other programs. Right. And the problem too is, like, $200 is nice, but it's not enough to, like, probably be enough to take somebody off some of their social services. So it's like, right. It's not a perfect solution at all. But, like, I just think it's like, how can these programs just get more directly into the hands or be led back to, like, Lawrence's initial point, be, like, the development of those programs at least be under the leadership of the most impacted and informed people about the issues. Right. Like, that's at a minimum, you know, have it be those people figuring out how to do it instead of, again, like, a bunch of, like, rich people who have a trust fund so they can buy a $200,000 cannabis license and pop up a dispensary and feel cool about themselves.
Right.
Right. Like, who's going to... versus somebody who's been in the community, maybe been impacted. They run a dispensary where they also teach harm reduction workshops in the back or to connect with local kids. Different, like, there can be such a different relationship too. If you have it, like, how cool would it be to have a co-op where, like, it was a, like, worker owned and run and people could be members of the dispensary, like,
right.
Make it, like, actually a thing that is community led and could have so much more to it than just, like, a place to make bank.
Right, exactly.
Right, and then you get a discount. You just got to work 4 hours a week or whatever.
Right. That'd be so cool, mm-hmm. actually.
Exactly.
That would be awesome.
I mean, I guess how many people would you need to have buy into your co-op to get, like, at a $200,000 for a license?
Right. Isn't that obscene? You need
200 people. It's insane. I'm like,
for what?
It's obscene.
No, but, like, tell me, like, what does the license actually do that it needs to be $200,000? That's what I would like to know. That's what I really would like to know. And where is that $200,000 going to?
I guess that's
to?
How they're going to pay for their new regulation staff or whatever.
Do they need to be paid? They don't need to be paid that much.
Nah.
No.
Yeah, there is a lot
it's
of...
It's just like guaranteeing you're going to have an inequitable system from the beginning.
Versus that's the
being
thing.
Like, let's set aside right. money to make it accessible. And then we'll make money still, no matter who's running it, to do the shit we need to do.
Right. They're gonna make money regardless. So why not make it fair from the get go? And if you're gonna set it at $200,000 or some obscene price like that, you know how they have that, like, first time buyers program? You gotta have a program like that for people that have been impacted. Where, like, if you've been impacted, all right, we waive it. It's greatly reduced, or, like, you have, like, I don't know, you have greater access or easier access to obtaining the license. That's what needs to happen.
So you guys were mentioning about opioid use disorder.
Oh yeah.
And I had pulled up this document that was sent to me. It's about how to use cannabis to reduce and replace opioid medications. It's written by Dr. Dustin Sulak, co-founder of Healer. You can check that out at healer.com. But it says thousands of people have used cannabis to help them reduce and replace opioid medication, as demonstrated in numerous recent scientific papers and strongly supported by animal research. The doctor created a survey of his patients in 2016. Of the 542 opioid users who added cannabis, 39% were able to completely stop opioid use, 39% used cannabis to reduce their opioid dosage, and adding cannabis reduced pain by more than 40% in nearly half the patients and improved function by 80%. In 87% of patients, it improved their quality of life.
Nice.
So almost 90% of the people have just improved their life.
Right.
That doesn't sound too terrible to me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't understand. But so like,
and I think it's really powerful that it's like another step down in some ways with medicated assisted treatment, which right. I think is really powerful for people, you know, to feel like there's another step down if you like don't want to be on mat or doing that like forever. Like, oh,
right.
This is another way to help me kind of transition out of that.
Right. Like because I'm on opioids, yeah. because I'm in pain. And I need something, you know, I don't like the side effects of the medication or the dependency or whatever, but I don't want to deal with the pain.
Right.
And if you have another tool to use, yep. then why not?
Yeah. That's true. I like that. And I feel like, at least in the area around here, there's a few providers that will give you, you know, they'll sign, do the whatever process, certify you to get your medical marijuana card. I don't know if they charge. I feel like they don't charge. I feel like they just do paperwork, whatever. But I know, like, there's, of course, online services where you pay, like, $150 or $120, and then you meet with a doctor online, and they, you know, do whatever they need to do, and you get it. But, like, I feel like providers are, you know, coming on board with, you know, all right, yeah, that's fine. I wonder, I feel like, aren't treatment centers also being, like, more okay with, like, all right, so you're testing positive for weed, so what? Right? I feel like
they just tell them, go get your card.
Right.
Like, we can't penalize you if you go get your card.
Right. Right.
But then, I don't know if it's changed since, but like a year or two ago, I was still hearing people that were like, their doctor was like, they had to bring in the receipt from the dispensary, and they had to bring in their medication to prove that they were actually, you know, had tablets or edibles or whatever, rather than they're just smoking flowered marijuana, you know, and pretending that they're getting it from the dispensary. Like, that's so there was still, like, a layer of stigma there.
Right, yeah. That's true. Huh. Interesting.
Well, the good news is you are allowed to grow under the new law also. Up to 6 plants. Only 3 can be mature at a time. No more than 12 plants per household if there's more than one adult. So nice. Opens up another pathway.
Right.
Also,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
that can reduce some of the inequity as far as, you know, people being able to afford it.
That's true. I'm waiting for it to be like billable to your insurance, because even if, say, like, even if you get your medical marijuana card, you can, they don't bill that to your insurance. You're coming out of pocket for that.
Cash money,
right? Seriously, why can't we bill? Why can't this thing that's like, you know, medically approved now that my doctor, you know, and I have a card for, why is my insurance not paying for it? I just don't understand that. Why don't
it's
I just...
It's unbelievable how yes. insurance drives.
Yeah.
Insurance drives what we, like, what is normalized in healthcare. Like, not doctors, not nurses, not research, insurance companies. At the end of the day, are who normalize what is, like, appropriate medical care.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, you're so right. Like, it's a huge issue. You know, the fact that insurance rarely covers preventative care has impacted the fact that we don't value preventative care in our system. It's the right. same sort of thing. So, like, yeah, that's a great point. And I wonder if that's the sort of thing that people can, I don't even know how you begin to shift that and get insurance companies to be more open to covering that.
Right.
It's probably on the table, but it's kind of like a one step at a time thing.
Yeah.
Like, they move towards
yeah.
medical use and recreational use, and, you know, it'll probably be down the line. Yeah. But, you know, it's a good point that they were willing to spend, you know, I don't know how much it costs now, but, you know, back then, you know, almost $2,000 for a script of OxyContin, they were happy to pay for that. But
right.
Yeah. You know,
a couple hundred dollars a month for cannabis shouldn't be that far of a stretch, you know?
Seriously. Or we should be able to use our flex spending, you know?
FSA, baby.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks.
But, like, legit.
Yeah, no, seriously.
Legit.
Seriously. Like, why can't we? Why is this not an approved?
Yeah, policy? I mean, I feel like flex plans exist because insurance is so wonky. They're like, all right, we don't have to just give people money, they can spend it, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some things to think about.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think we covered a lot of ground this week, and I hope everybody could take something from what we talked about today and adapt it to their own life, changing new habits, creating new habits for the new year, and hope that we're coming to a close in this chapter of the. The pandemic and 2022 can be a year of opportunity. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are changing.
Yeah. There's so much change. Yeah, a lot of things are changing. A lot.
We're going into a new era of technology.
Yep.
You know, and a lot of workers' rights, pro-union, mm-hmm. The working people are really getting to have the power again. People are tired of working their same old jobs and not getting paid enough and getting abused at their jobs. And, they're taking off and taking this opportunity to create something new. Mm-hmm. And I hope everyone that's listening is able to do that as well. Those things that you've been telling yourself for years that you wanted to do, but you never made the time to do, I hope you do that this year. That's all I got, Phoebe. You have any change?
Oh, solid. I'm with you. Lean into the change, as Octavia Butler taught us. God is change, so it's the one thing you can always count on, and it brings new opportunities whenever it shows up. So be adaptable, be resilient, be bold, and be willing to let all of this moment of change in the world shape us, instead of being afraid of it. This is all we can do, is just show up and face it. So it's good to be back on the air with both of you.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to keep it real all year long. Y'all.
Yeah.
Real for real.
For real. All right.
Divination David, though. Bring us home.
Any final thoughts, David?
I agree with everyone, both of you. I think, maybe it's a little bit harsh, but, we adapt to change or we get left behind, and let's no one get left behind, Be better. Be real. Keeping it real.
Word. Take a look inside yourself and realize you're really blessed. All right, y'all. See you in 2 weeks. There's always someone who has it worse. Have a good day.
Peace.
Signing off. So don't worry, just push on through. Keeping it real. Gotta big up all my people who be working on the future, though they know they gotta struggle. Keeping it real. To all my homies working on the 9 to 5 and doing right to keep themselves up out of trouble. Keeping it real. Although sometimes I know it seems impossible, there ain't no need in drowning in your sorrow. Keeping it real. If things are as bad as they can be, you could be sure to be a brighter tomorrow.